This is Puget Sound Now, a closer look at the people and issues across our community. Here's your host, Northwest News Radio's Bill Schwartz.
Spots and floaters could be a sign of permanent vision loss.
Diabetes damages the retina.
Warnings about diabetic retinopathy. Get ready for the 2026 Seattle Super Plunge.
And individuals get to take a dip in the cold water for Special Olympics Washington.
A new twist to support Washington Special Olympics. From snow skiing to cycling, recreation activities for people with disabilities.
It's getting folks out to exercise their ability and be independent.
Outdoors for All expanding to Pierce County. And a Seattle hockey game where the winners are beating a life-threatening disease.
How did they not make it? Mm-hmm. And I did.
Also, how to make World Kindness Day last every day. Hello again, Bill Schwartz in the driver's seat for Puget Sound Now. Leading off, do you have floaters or spots in your eyes? And did you know it could be the start of irreversible blindness? Well, a new survey has some concerning results. Let's discuss. Stopping by Puget Sound Now is Dr. Jeffrey Emerson, president for the American Society of Retina Specialists. Many thanks for this important conversation.
Thank you.
Because of genetics, other lifestyle factors, Doctor, 40 million Americans have diabetes. Now, how can that lead to the very serious condition we know as diabetic retinopathy?
Diabetes damages the retina. The retina is a very delicate but important part of the eye at the back of the eye. It's the light-sensitive part of the eye. And if there's damage, it results in blurred vision or even blindness. 10 million Americans have diabetic retinopathy. Almost half of people with diabetes will get diabetic retinopathy. And our goal is to detect it early so we can prevent the vision loss.
Now, I just had my semi-annual exam, which included a complete picture of my retina. Can most eye doctors spot early warning signs of diabetic retinopathy?
Yes, and getting those eye exams is very important because in the beginning, diabetic retinopathy has no symptoms. It's only later in the disease when there's significant damage that you might notice a problem. So if you are diabetic and you can't remember your most recent dilated exam, you should get one. Or if you are having symptoms like blurred vision, difficulty reading, floaters, shadows in the vision, then it's time to see a retina specialist. They have advanced imaging technology in our clinics. We can tell you what are the options and get you treated.
Is dilation the only way to do this test, or do the machines now give you a pretty good picture of what's in your eye?
Great question. The machines are getting better. So for early stages of diabetic retinopathy, I think it is okay to get a small pupil picture, but once it gets into the later stages, then dilation is an important part of the exam.
Our guest on Puget Sound Now is Dr. Jeffrey Emerson, president of the American Society of Retina Specialists. You were in the Seattle area. So why was a survey commissioned by your association?
When we catch diabetic retinopathy early, the treatments are very effective. Most of the time, we can avoid vision loss or stop it completely. Later in the disease, it gets harder to reverse the vision loss. So it's important to get those exams and get in for treatment if there's a problem.
Prevention is the key here, but are there any new treatments, drugs, or therapies helping those patients get some of their vision back?
Thanks to research, there are great treatments. They fall into three main categories. There are eye injections, where we put medicine into the eye. There's also laser and surgery. Now, in diabetic retinopathy, the most common of the treatments is the eye injections. My patients come in for a treatment every 1 to 2 months. There's newer medicines that are in development that tend to last longer, so the patients don't need to come quite so frequently. And there's ongoing research with implants and gene therapy that's also really exciting.
Do retina specialists work hand in hand with doctors to help the patient lead a more healthy lifestyle and then prevent diabetes in the first place?
Yeah, it really is a team approach. The better the glucose control and also blood pressure control and lifestyle in general, then the slower complications develop, like diabetic retinopathy. So me, a retina specialist, I often work with an endocrinologist to maximize the diabetes control.
I understand the team approach. And what about vitamins? Are they a key part now for people? Are there any particular vitamins that could improve this condition?
There are. There are some eye vitamins that help with macular degeneration. But specific to diabetic retinopathy, it's more controlling the glucose and improving the hemoglobin A1C number.
So where can our listeners go to learn more about diabetic retinopathy and then find a specialist in our Seattle area?
On our website, there are two great tools. seeforalifetime.org is a place you can go for some great information. There's also findyourretinaspecialist.org, where you can find a doctor who's near you. You just have to put in your zip code.
Hey, it's great to speak with Dr. Jeffrey Emerson, president of the American Society of Retina Specialists. Many thank yous for the conversation on Puget Sound Now, and be well.
Thank you.
Special Olympics Washington is making the biggest expansion in its polar plunge history, all in an effort to support over 12,000 local athletes. A deeper look with Puget Sound Now's Lillian James.
Community members are making a splash for Special Olympics Washington. Today on Puget Sound Now, I am joined by Mary Doe, the CEO of Special Olympics Washington, to learn more about their 24-hour Seattle Super Plunge event. I am also joined by Super Plunger Chris. What is the Seattle Super Plunge? Can you give me the brief history of it?
Yeah, so in Washington State, for Special Olympics Washington, we had kind of a baby Super Plunge, which was we've done like once or twice, but we're going big this upcoming year. This is our 50th anniversary for Special Olympics Washington, and we want to do more for 12,000 athletes and participants across the state. And so on February 13th, we will have a handful of passionate, warm-hearted, brave people who will take the plunge 24 hours from morning to night. All in support of Special Olympics Washington. So the idea is that they are raising funds and awareness to support those 12,000 athletes that participate year-round and also help us reach more.
That's awesome. And where in Seattle is it being held?
So the Super Plunge and the actual plunge the next day, February 13th, will take place at Magnuson Park in Seattle. So it's a new location for the Seattle Polar Plunge. And individuals get to take a dip in the cold water for Special Olympics Washington.
Sounds cold, but very fun. Yeah. And are there any other similar events outside of Seattle happening?
Absolutely. So Polar Plunge is a series that we conduct each year. It's one of our largest statewide fundraising events and awareness vehicles for our organization. And so there are 8 polar plunges that will be taking place across the state. Starting from January all the way through March, and 8 locations that they can find on our website that include Lewis County to Tri-Cities on the east side of the mountains. Of course, the Seattle location with the Super Plunge, and then the actual plunge the day after at Magnuson Park, in Wenatchee, up in Lake Stevens, Tacoma, and Anacortes. So it is a big polar plunge season for us coming up real soon.
Yeah, and I saw that you guys are introducing a 5K run/walk option. Can you tell me more about that?
Absolutely. So Polar Plunge is for any and all, but we also wanted to add a little bit something extra. As we said, 50th anniversary, we're coming out big and bold in 2026. In addition to the plunge, where individuals can take a dip in the icy water, we're also opening it up for folks that who want to participate in a 5K run or walk. In support of Special Olympics, and anyone of any ability is welcome to participate in either one or both.
And Chris, this is for you. What is it like to participate?
So this will be my, fifth time doing the Super Plunge. So fifth time doing the 24 plunges in 24 hours. It started as a bucket list item, and it's weirdly a lot of fun. It sounds terrifying. It is terrifying at first, but it ends up being a lot of fun. It takes a lot of energy. There's a lot of camaraderie between people in the tent, and you're pumping people up. And then it really does help to remember that you're doing it for a good cause and not just jumping in the water for the sake of it. But it ends up being a really fun experience that is long lasting. And that's why I keep coming back, and I'm excited to take part in the first big Seattle Super Plunge.
Do you have any like silly stories that you remember from your time plunging?
Yes. So this will be my fifth time. Each plunge I've participated in before, and I'm hoping Seattle's the same. We've done themes and costumes for each plunge. So some really ridiculous costumes, lots of hairy bodysuits, prom dresses, inflatable dinosaurs and high heels. So those are probably the ones that come to mind, are the ridiculous costumes that people have plunged in. And I hope to kind of help start that tradition here as well.
That's awesome. That sounds like so much fun to not only be a part of, but to watch. And how can people sign up to be a part of this event?
Yeah, so the best way to do that is through our website, which is polarplungewa.com. And that you'll find all the information on the 8 locations, more on the super plunge, as well as fun incentives, ways to fundraise and rally up your friends and colleagues, family members to participate in either the Polar Plunge and or 5K run and walk. So lots of information there. This is more than a fundraiser for Special Olympics Washington. It's an opportunity to show your support as a statewide movement of inclusion, encourage, and community. I think our athletes show up every day with courage and confidence, joy, and we need our community more than ever to do the same. And it's a fun opportunity. All the funds raised through events like Polar Plunge and the 5K run will support the 12,000 athletes that we currently have in place that are participating year round in sports training and competition, health programming and leadership programs. But there's always more individuals on the sidelines that we're hoping to reach that have not had the joy of Special Olympics yet. And so our goal here is to raise $350,000 to ensure that every athlete has an opportunity to play and lead in the communities that they live in.
That's so great. And are those the 12,000 athletes, are those across the country or are they in here in Washington?
In Washington State. So our organization serves just Washington State athletes of all ages and abilities, starting from 2 years old all the way up to 100 or as long as they want to participate, again, in year-round opportunities. And so this is all for Washington State athletes, and it's a ripple effect. Not only our athletes are benefiting from this, our families and then overall communities are benefiting from this as well.
That was Mary Doe, the CEO of Special Olympics Washington, and Super Plunger Chris. I'm Lillian James on Puget Sound Now.
Since 1978, Bellevue-based Outdoors for All Foundation has been making sure hundreds of children and adults with disabilities exercise their abilities. Stopping by Puget Sound Now today is Outdoors for All Foundation Executive Director Connor Inslee. It's great to meet you and learn about your organization.
Thanks for having us out here today. Great to be here.
The organization started as Ski for All, and you had 15 kids up at Snoqualmie Summit. First and foremost, are you an avid outdoor guy, and is that how you got connected with this nonprofit?
Of course I am. I've been outdoors my whole life. I was fortunate enough to grow up in a family where my parents took me out. We went out skiing, cycling, hiking around the hills. And it wasn't until later in life, really college, when I started doing outdoor activities with friends, and they asked me how I got into it. And I just said, oh, my family, doesn't everybody do this? And that's kind of when I realized that not everybody has been as fortunate as me to have their folks and their family and their community get them outdoors and have built a career on making sure that everyone has access to outdoor recreation.
It's one thing to ski yourself, but how do you adapt your skills and then teach others who are physically challenged?
It's a great question. In the ski world, in the adaptive ski world, there's a phrase we come back to a lot when we're training instructors, and it's a ski is a ski is a ski, meaning a ski is going to act the way a ski does. And it's all about how we connect to that ski. So we just teach our instructors, teach ourselves, and we train on, you know, anybody's ability level, whether it's at their foot, their knee, their hips, their chest, and whether they're using sit equipment, whether they're using outriggers. We focus on what they can do and how we can apply that to make them successful in the ski world.
We had an interview recently with Little Bit Riders, and they have adaptive therapy for people who are probably your same clients with the skiing and cycling. And the rewards that people have in transforming their lives. Talk to us a little bit about that. When they do get out there and ski or cycle or hike, how does it make them feel?
Yeah, we share a lot with Little Bit, serve a lot of the same folks, you know, same mission. They're an incredible organization. We have a laundry list of our success stories, and we all have our personal, you know, favorites. But for me, it's getting folks out to exercise their ability and be independent. You know, this winter we had a new skier come to us, cross-country skiing, a sit skier. So they're in a adaptable ski. So you're sitting on two skis and you're pushing with your arms and some modified ski poles. The first day they came out, they learned to get around. They got around the learning area. By the end of our six-week program, that individual did 8 miles on the Nordic Trail, going all the way out the trail into the wilderness and back. And you talk about opening those doors to recreation and seeing the way that they light up. And they're, you know, they're out there, they're doing it. They're just having a blast, they're getting exercise. And that, I think, is when we're in the office and we're raising money and then, you know, working hard, and we go out there and we see these moments of success. And that's why we're all here.
That's wonderful. Our guest on Puget Sound Now is Connor Inslee. He's the executive director for the Bellevue-based nonprofit Outdoors for All Foundation. In 91, your organization started offering summer activities, which led to the name change from the ski. How many programs do you have now, and what sort of gamut do you run?
It's a good question. So we changed the name from Ski for All when we realized we're doing so much more than skiing, and we are a year-round operation. You know, our short sell is if REI sells it, we do it adaptive. So we have our ski school, snowboard, cross-country ski. Our largest program is actually our cycling program with about 250 adaptive bikes, which is one of the largest inventory of adaptive bikes in the country, if not the biggest. We haven't traveled the country to count and confirm that yet, but we're pretty proud of our inventory. We have summer camps going for youth and adults. We have adaptive rock climbing, canoeing, kayaking, gravel biking. So we really just get out there, do all the activities. Our summer camps run all summer long, 5 days a week at Magnuson Park and out of Lake Sammamish State Park on the east side. And they're out there doing different activities every day, going to the zoo, doing environmental education, going rock climbing, going hiking, riding bikes, and having fun.
What's the difference between an adaptive bicycle and a two-wheeler?
Adaptive bikes come in all shapes and sizes, and that's the point of being adaptive. You know, there isn't just one adaptive bike that works for everybody, which is partially why we have so many. So adaptive bikes can start by being a three-wheel bike, you know, for an individual that may need some assistance with their balance. So we get on a three-wheel bike. It allows the body to have more support, a stronger platform so that they can focus on the riding. We have bikes that are tandems, either in line or side by side, for a visual impaired rider who may need to have somebody who has better sight riding with them. We have cycles that you sit in that you pedal with your hands. So if you don't have the use of your legs, you can be out there on a hand cycle. Those come in a variety of shapes and sizes. We have therapeutic bikes that are direct drives that give better feedback to the rider. So all sorts of bikes, and it's been pretty amazing. And I've been here just over 15 years, and the industry and the technology has really come leaps and bounds as far as the energy and the ingenuity that's going into this equipment. Just when I started, there were really only two or three sit skis to choose from in the industry, and that's kind of all we had. And now we've got, you know, 10 plus 15 models out there, and we're just seeing some amazing, incredible technology really opening the doors.
Our guest on Puget Sound Now, Connor Inslee, with the Outdoors for All Foundation. Can you give us an idea what the staff members do, how the volunteers are trained for all these specialty programs?
You bet. We are currently a staff of 22 year-round employees in admin and program delivery and over 800 volunteers. So we are a volunteer-driven program. We rely on our amazingly dedicated and engaged volunteers to be out there delivering our mission. Our ski school is taught by volunteer instructors. So, you know, over 240 volunteers running our ski schools at Snoqualmie Pass and Stevens Pass. Our volunteers are running our cycling programs, our kayaking programs, most of what we do. Our staff are here to administer those programs and train those volunteers on them. So we have a strong team of program staff, a number of certified therapeutic recreation specialists on staff who are out there both delivering and managing our programs, driving our trailers. We are all over the state. We are all over Western Washington. So we've got our vans, our trucks, our trailers, and our equipment coming and going all year long.
What sort of demand or growth have you seen as people with disabilities search for ways to improve their quality of life and really feel connected?
Boy, the demand has definitely grown, and you know our goal is to meet it. We made a strategic decision a few years ago as part of the pandemic where we reached out to our stakeholders in our community. And we learned that the number one and number two barrier to adaptive recreation is transportation and funding. So we said, hey, let's address those. And that's where we've come up with the current model we're implementing, which is a series of base camps. So we've got a location at Magnuson Park in northeast Seattle, a location at Lake Sammamish, and we are targeting to have a location in Pierce County by the end of this year, with the goal of putting our programming into communities so individuals have less transportation to get to our programs. And it's our goal to reduce those barriers by being in the community.
It's great to know. A couple more minutes now with Connor Inslee, Executive Director for Outdoors for All Education. You just opened Lake Sammamish State Park Adaptive Cycling Center, training folks there. Any other major projects? Well, you said Pierce County, but how about some events or fundraising things that people ought to know about through your website, which is outdoorsforall.org?
We're hoping to raise some funds to support our adaptive cycling centers at Magnuson and Lake Sam. You know, it's a great opportunity getting those supported so that we can provide cycles 7 days a week all summer long. A really unique program in that it's free, no cost to the user. We are underwriting the full program to ensure that everyone has access to these adaptive programs. We're hoping again to get up to Pierce County this year.
That's terrific. You said free nowadays or something? It's free? Are we crazy? Connor Inslee, Outdoors for All Foundation, the executive director. So many thanks, and keep up the good work. Thanks for being on Puget Sound Now.
Thanks for having me.
An indoor game where winners beat a life-threatening disease. This weekend, Seattle's annual Hockey Fights Cancer game. Very personal cause for a Kraken player and a broadcaster. Jaden Schwartz began his pro hockey career wearing number 9 for the St. Louis Blues. Then in 2014, switched to number 17 as a tribute to his older sister, Mandy.
You know, she loved hockey. She was very passionate. Me and my brother learned a lot from her. Her dedication, her hard work. She was such an inspirational person, and she always wore 17.
Mandy Schwartz was a talented hockey player in Saskatchewan and at Yale University. Then she was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia in 2008. After her diagnosis, says Jaden, bone marrow drives and a foundation were established at the college and in Canada.
So she's continuing to, you know, to be around and, you know, be an angel for a lot of people, and you know, I'm grateful to be in this opportunity and be able to wear her number and kind of live our dream as we had as young kids.
The bone marrow drives did not find a match for Mandy, and she passed at the all-too-young age of 23 in 2011. However, the Mandy Schwartz Foundation has led to bone marrow matches for dozens of young adults, including Reagan Brown.
I was diagnosed with leukemia on June 12th of 2017, right after I graduated in May. When I went through chemo, they told me that that wouldn't heal me. I would have to have a transplant. So my brother, my mom, and my dad got tested to see if they were a match for me, and they wasn't. So I got put in the registry.
And then I got an email and a call and all kinds of things saying, you're a potential match.
I matched with one person out of the whole entire registry and was a 10 out of 10 match.
I was like, okay, let's do it.
I couldn't be more thankful for the Schwartz and what they're doing for their daughter, because if it wasn't for them, then I would have never found my donor.
You know, when you see something like that, there's nothing like it, to be honest, when you meet two people were one match and saved the other person's life.
Each November, every team in the NHL hosts their Hockey Fights Cancer game. Seattle Kraken announcer, colon cancer survivor, Eddie Olczyk.
I think it's the greatest initiative the National Hockey League has brought to the forefront. And it's not easy. It's not easy on the person in a battle. And you know, post being very lucky, and I don't know how I ended up making it, but, you know, there you deal with a lot of things. And one thing that I've learned has been survivor's guilt. Because when you hear stories like that about Mandy and other people that have come in contact with is, you know, how did they not make it? Mm-hmm. And I did.
This Saturday at Climate Pledge Arena, the Kraken team up with Virginia Mason Franciscan Health for free prostate cancer screenings. Men age 40 and older can walk up and take a blood test to detect for elevated PSA levels, a possible sign of prostate cancer. Results then mailed to the participant's home. Jaden Schwartz knows his sister Mandy would be proud.
There's nothing like that. There's no better feeling than seeing someone survive.
If you can't make it to the hockey game, always a wise choice for older males to have their PSA screenings at your next doctor's appointment. World Kindness Day was celebrated last Thursday, but Puget Sound Now Scott Carty reminds us we can see kindness all around us every day.
Some days it may seem invisible, maybe completely blocked by the so-called Seattle freeze, but there really is a lot of kindness out there. The quality of being friendly, generous, and considerate, according to the dictionary.
Can treat people with kindness. Find a place to do good.
And the more kindness, the better, according to author Simon Sinek.
It feels good when we do something nice for someone. It feels good when someone does something nice for us. And the best part about oxytocin is the more oxytocin we have in our bodies, the more generous we become.
Sinek says even witnessing kindness can make you feel good.
It is Mother Nature's way of trying desperately to get us to look after each other.
At Ballard Food Bank, they have the Kindness Cafe, where anyone can receive kindness through a warm meal, conversation, or a cup of coffee at no cost. There's a Kindness for Kids Guild. It supports Seattle Children's Uncompensated Care. Online, there are plenty of poems and essays about kindness. Poet Josie Balka.
No one will ever change their mind for you. But if you're unable to be nice, they will change their mind about you. A lot of people will. You can be gentle with things that aren't yours. Understanding is wisdom. Kindness is a choice.
Actress Emma Thompson reading Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye.
Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things.
The great Maya Angelou talking about going on stage.
I bring everyone who has ever been kind to me with me.
And there are a lot of songs about kindness. From Tim McGraw.
Always stay humble and kind.
This performance by Glenn Campbell.
Try a little kindness.
And that song I started the story with.
Kindness.
Treat People with Kindness by Harry Styles. Abigail Marsh is a psychology and neuroscience professor at Georgetown University. She told USA Today that people are actually becoming more compassionate over time. She points that displaying kindness on social media and the ability to make online donations makes altruism easier than ever. And Marsha's advice for living a kind life? Just start. She says once you do, you'll feel the difference, and because it feels good, you'll keep doing it. So in the spirit of kindness, thank you for listening. For Puget Sound Now, I'm Scott Carty.
As Ellen DeGeneres used to close her show, let's be kind to one another. The federal government shutdown is over, funding restored for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs, SNAP. But lines are longer than ever at local food banks, including Eloise Cooking Pot, a pop-up food distribution site each Wednesday in the Tacoma Dome parking lot.
We have to make Thanksgiving dinner happen.
Andrea Blue is the voice behind Eloise Cooking Pot and Tacoma's Making a Difference Foundation. Their latest campaign stocks the shelves at JBLM Food Bank, where non-essential military personnel did not receive a paycheck for a month.
There's a huge need for the people who serve our country every day for food.
The Thanksgiving grocery giveaway supports 800 JBLM families.
And the military, you know, they're serving our country, and we forget that they're human, too. We forget that they have families, too.
Andrea Blue was moved to tears when a young child opened their piggy bank to donate an allowance for the hungry.
Someone's giving you their last. I'm sure they were saving for something. They didn't anticipate a SNAP crisis.
Donate. Volunteer. The website for Making a Difference Foundation is themadf.org. I'm Bill Swartz. We're back again next weekend.
Thank you for listening to Puget Sound Now, a closer look at the people and issues across our community. Listen for new episodes every weekend and download full episodes at nwnewsradio.com or wherever you get your podcast. Puget Sound Now is a public service of Lotus Seattle Corp and is a production of Northwest News Radio, 97.7 AM 1000.